Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Hello, everyone. Tonight, I want to talk about some silly laws. I should warn you, in my opinion, that description fits at least 99% of them. I'm not going to be talking about the truly and obviously silly laws that have been on the books for decades or centuries. Those are pretty well documented in several places on the internet. I'm going to talk about laws that are about to be or just have been enacted that range from nuisance level to full-scale threats. I'll start with a silly nuisance sort of law that's gaining popularity. It's been enacted in San Francisco. There's a protest coming up to fight it in Berkeley. Our occasional guest, Ava Bird, will be reading poems at the protest. What's it all about? Well, it seems the good citizens of these cities are sick of stepping around hippies on the sidewalks. They've come up with an idea, laws against sitting. That's right, folks. Sit down on the sidewalk, you're in for a $500 fine. Of course, a lot of the people that might sit on the sidewalk don't have a home. They certainly don't have $500 to pay the city. So in essence, this is an excuse to put people in jail. We need another one of those, right? That's what America is all about. In Fort Lauderdale last week, police arrested Nate Pym and Hunter Altschul, two volunteers at the Food Not Bombs May Day celebration, for trespassing on a grassy lawn outside a bank tower. Perhaps that law was enacted because of the other shooters in the JFK assassination? You know, the ones on the grassy knoll? Whatever. It's a silly law. There's a new one they're trying to pass to ban feeding in public spaces. That's another in the long line of attempts to suppress the part of society that's either chosen or been forced to live outside. Many homeless are afflicted with mental illness and are incapable of gainful employment, but many others are just fed up. They're fed up with things in general, mostly the police and other thugs. The harassment never stops. In Fort Lauderdale, not only Food Not Bombs, an international organization that was founded by tonight's special guest, Keith McHenry, but also the Cooperative Feeding Program, run by Marty Foreman, and Love Thy Neighbor, run by Arnold Abbott, are frequently, if not constantly, targeted by government and cops. This is silly. It's probably unconstitutional. And nobody seems to care very much. The other silly law is perhaps more threatening to the rest of us. You know how they've made the whole process of getting on a plane practically impossible? Body scanning, strip searches, all that stuff. And the no-fly list. Well, in the name of safety, Senator Charles Schumer is proposing a no-ride list for Amtrak trains. Better hope your name isn't the same as somebody on that list or you're going to miss your train. If you're very, very lucky, you may not go to jail. Possibly, you'll even be able to get on tomorrow's train. Because there are only a couple of trains a day, at least down here in South Florida. Despite it being arguably the best form of public travel, the railroad is not popular in the USA. Speaking of trains, I saw a new movie, Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. I just read the book, too. I can see why it's so popular among right-wingers, but there was actually a lot there that I liked, too. It's a strong pro-capitalist statement, but that's actually quite simple. It says that people should not be ashamed to want to make money of their own. They shouldn't be expected to give their work away free. I don't really have a problem with that. The concept of from each according to his abilities and to each according to his needs is vilified in the book. And, well, I do have a problem with that because I believe in that concept. A case is made that communist philosophy cannot work because there'll be too much need, false need most of the time. I'm sure most of us have actually seen false need in action. Most often it's the government telling us that it needs our work, our freedom, our money, so it can invade some other bunch of victims. There are some individuals that need or think that they need too much too. But I think it could balance out, certainly in small applications. Thanks for listening to me ramble on here. I think it's time to turn the show over to my co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. You said earlier that it was hot in Fort Lauderdale. Today in Duluth, near Duluth, we live in Cloquet, actually, it's radiant wet and still cold, still winter. Today we welcome Keith McHenry. He's on the road in Florida. We also welcome Mark Bodine from Livingston, Montana. So we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Montana, and Keith McHenry on the road in Florida. Let's see, the American dream, what's this all about? It's about becoming the sort of country we always say that we are, and it's never been more important than it is today. First of all, if you look at how massive a propaganda operation is involved in the fake killing of Osama bin Laden, I think we can get a brief glimpse into the mind of those in power, how frightened they are of any hardworking folks who have been telling the truth about the actual events of 9/11 for a decade. Those who are still on the side of American power, which is most people, have grabbed onto this fake announcement with both hands. Those of us who are not on the side of the America that you see, but the America that has been deported, kept incommunicado in an undisclosed location, waiting to return and take its rightful place, are well aware of the lie. But it's true that it's not easy to get on the right side of America, the rebel, righteous America, on the side of the truth and on the side of the poor. You have to work at it. There is heavy lifting involved. If you go along with the stream, well, then you have American flags and "We Got Him" stickers duct taped over your windshield, and we just hope you crash soon so we can get on with the business of replanting the tree and rebuilding the road and the rest of the city. I spoke a couple weeks ago about crossing the line at Offutt Air Force Base near Omaha in the early 1980s. I crossed because the Strategic Air Command was at Offutt Air Force Base, and the SAC is responsible for the targeting of all our nuclear weapons. I served up 10 days, 30 days, 50 days, and two separate six-month sentences, county jail in Omaha, Lincoln Federal Prison, Chicago, Terre Haute. And I was overnight in Leavenworth one night. I was at El Reno, and I served a majority of one sentence in El Paso, near El Paso, called Latuna. Right now, Mark Kenney, he also is in jail for 6 months for crossing it off at Air Force Base. And he is being held at a federal prison camp in Duluth. I covered it a little bit here and there in a lot of my books about my prison experience. It's sprinkled in. And it's probably why I started writing. I really wanted to sit down and write in order to be to understand what I had experienced. You know, that helps me to understand what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking to write. I quit my prison career in 1989. I did 6 months in the Pottawatomie County Jail. That's in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and it was just a really hard time. I guess post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever you call it, but it doesn't really matter what it was like for me or how I felt or what my feelings were as I went through it. It does to me, but if we get into that too deeply, perhaps we lose sight of the rightness or goodness of the action and the doing. I get real emotional talking about it, and I really don't do it much. But there are many who have done this over history, really tough times during the World Wars, Vietnam, people like Abby Hoffman, the Plowshares activist since the 80s, Frank Cordero of Des Moines, the first guest on our program, has served several years in jail. He's still going at it. We just have an incredibly rich history of very courageous people in this country who have risked jail and gone to jail for decades and decades, centuries up to this day. The actions include trespass, tax resistance, draft resistance, sit-ins, pouring blood, perhaps attempting to destroy or damage weapon systems, and I have no problem with any of those actions. There are also people still in prison for protests of the 60s that it might have been involved in shootings or bombings where people were injured. I wouldn't endorse or participate in violence against people, but I would also not be quick to condemn those who, when face-to-face with the actual reality of American power and violence, choose to fight. The same way as it would be hard to condemn those in El Salvador of the 80s or today in Iraq and Afghanistan or Libya or any number of countries around the world who are placed into the very difficult circumstances that they are and see no choice but to pick up the gun. I do believe in nonviolence for the reason that I don't think I can handle my own feelings after having killed someone. I think I'd rather be unfree than to have that on my mind for the rest of my life. Others don't see it that way. Fist fights would be different, though, wouldn't they? I actually don't think the policy of nonviolence would be so important if fighting the government or oppressor in a street fight. But killing, that's just so much different, too serious, too much. Though remember, as we might debate line by line, word for word, the strategies or moralities associated with armed resistance, the foe we face, the United States of America's corporate military and prison machine does not think twice or even once about whether killing is an acceptable policy. Anything our military or police or intelligence agencies can get away with, they will do that. Good to go. And so if we are aware of our world around us, our history, our present reality, and with an eye to what kind of world our children will have, we have to wonder what should we do and what can we do. And then we come face to face with our own personality. We zoom the big Google Earth map down, way down, down to one individual, and it does matter how that person feels, what he thinks. And the question then becomes, what will we do? There are all kinds of actions available. All don't have to involve breaking the law and going to jail. I like to think that writing is something. I have not broken the law since I crossed the line by myself at Moffitt with my little thou shalt not kill sign after Clinton began bombing Yugoslavia, I guess with the exception of my more recent crossed-out tax forms. I used to be very adamant that the only acceptable form of protest was breaking the law, putting it all on the line. And as I might have said at the time, I respect and admire those who still go to jail, such as Mark Kenney, now doing 6 months here in the Duluth Federal Prison. But I also think that there's just got to be room for all of us. I sure hope there is. And I think we will find our own way, each of us, to do whatever we can do, as long as we stay awake, stay angry, and don't let them scare us. The forces of evil desperately want us to be afraid. They need us to be afraid, and we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
And now, on to the news briefs.
Well, we suggest people go to the Nuclear Resistor at www.nukeresistor.org to read about heroic people you will never hear about on the nightly news or national public radio. At the Nuclear Resistor website, you will be able to read about recent resistance actions against the Empire of Barack Obama and the U.S. military corporation and prison complex. Here's a list of imprisoned resistors.
Mark Kenny, 6 months, 4/27/11. He was trespassing at Offutt Air Force Base. Father Bill Bixel, 3 months plus 6 months home confinement. Susan Crane, 15 months. Lynn Greenwald, 6 months. Father Stephen Kelly, 15 months. Sister Ann Montgomery, 2 months plus 4 months home confinement.
Those were the Disarm Now Plowshares group convicted of all damage to government property, conspiracy and trespass for treating the fence and entering the nuclear weapons storage area at Naval Base Kitsap Bangor. Also, Helen Woodson is serving 106 months. She's out in September. This is for parole violation of anti-war protest at federal courthouse in Kansas City. Leonard Peltier is doing life. He was in Leavenworth for a long time. Now he's at USP Lewisburg. This was involving the shootout in the Pine Ridge area, I think it was 1975. Louis Vitale is doing 6 months at FCI Lompoc. Michael David Omondi, 6 months at EF.
Also, we have Bradley Manning, who was held pending charges at Fort Leavenworth, alleged to have leaked military video and documents showing evidence of U.S. war crimes. And there are so many others, we don't have time to read them all. But that's the way it is. May 12th, 2011.
Sorry, Chuck, we got any other news we can talk about?
Well, we had some other names. Let me read some of them. Carl W. Stewart, 2 years at Montgomery Federal Prison Camp. He pled guilty to filing false income tax returns and failing to file as a non-public war tax resister. I wonder what the difference is between a non-public war tax resister and a public war tax resister. That's interesting. Got Norman Edgar Lowry, Jr. He's in Lancaster County Prison, trespassing at a military recruiting office. Rahil Dafir, FCI Terre Haute. He provided humanitarian and financial aid to Iraqis in violation of U.S. sanctions. Len, do we have Mark back yet?
Yeah, I think we do.
Oh, I'm here.
Hello, Mark. I'm not sure if Mike's on here.
Did we lose Mike now?
Yeah, we lost Mike now. We're just having one of those nights. Mark, you're the poetry editor of Counterpunched.
Yeah.
And I believe
Counterpunch.org is the website.
Okay. I noticed that you also direct and design for the stage. I always like, I was a theater major in college, so I'm always fascinated by that.
Yeah, excellent. You know, the nice thing about theater is I can tie in a lot of my political work, and people, you know, are willing to pay and come and sit and listen for 2 hours.
Or sometimes you can't even get them to show up when you have a free show, but you never know.
Oh, it's true.
Mark, did you bring some poems that you can read to us?
I did. You want me to launch into one right now for you?
I'd appreciate that, yes.
Okay, sure. This is out of my book. The book is The Moon Cracks Open, and this is a piece that happens out on the Pine Ridge Res. I heard you guys mention Leonard Peltier a bit ago. It was right down the road from where that shootout was. It's called River Music. floating, eyes closed, face to an unclouded sky held by the cool hands of the Cheyenne River. I forget for a moment the uranium from inhuman minds seeping into each pore of my body, like late afternoon sunlight into every window in town. The uranium I myself put here by paying my taxes, by shopping for a bargain, by reading the lies of American history textbooks, by watching the propaganda of John Wayne on Sunday afternoons, wrapped in a blanket the colors of the flag, by thinking that wisdom is to be found in the books of dead men rather than in the song of a nighthawk or the poem of cottonwoods clacking in the breeze. I float apart from myself, allowing the river to carry me like a vapor, my feet dragging through muck and over rocks, weeds and small fish brushing my legs in velvety greeting. The sun through these pale eyelids becomes a field of sunflower. The voices of the native children downstream, bees darting among the golden heads nodding in the wind, they transform this poison nectar into song. And in my broken Lakota, with my funny city-bred accent, I try to sing along. Wamble Gleishka, Wanian Nihioe, a spotted eagle is coming for you. When I stand and stagger to the shore, dry off and climb into my truck, I hope that the toxins I have absorbed will leave this river some small part cleaner and will shine on my skin like a mirror. So that one, I wrote when I was spending some time in Red Shirt on the reservation there on Pine Ridge. And, uh-huh. Yeah. You want me to just give you another one?
Yeah, just keep going with a couple more.
Okay, I'll give you a couple more. This is a real short one that's brand new. Well, actually, I'm lying to you. It's from last summer. It's called Carbon. Driving late night through the pass with narcoleptic mountains pressing in from either side, and Schumann struggling through the static of the radio, and whitebark pines dying 20 yards away, and pelicans and everything else dying 2,000 miles away, and stars like ours dying 20,000 light years away. But then the radio clears and a piano sounds out pure as fire, and I realize that the passenger door is ajar, and the noise and smell of the wind writhing through the breach becomes a presence seated next to me. And when, by degrees, this presence becomes palpable enough to see from the corner of my eye, I speed up and say, I knew you'd have dark hair. Excuse me, I gotta have a little drink of my union-made PBR here.
Okay.
Get ready for one more, if that sounds good to you.
That sounds great.
All right. This is called This Poem. This poem was born on the wrong side of the tracks. This poem carries a razor in its boot. This poem is in bad need of a shave. This poem is written in tattoo ink on the thigh of a stripper. This poem is written in spray paint on the side of a fast-moving train. This poem ain't bound for glory. You're going to need a bigger boat for this poem. This poem meets the devil at the crossroads and runs him over. This poem says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, and I'll bust a cap in your ass. This poem will never get the Good Housekeeping seal of approval or be recommended by 4 out of 5 dentists who read poetry. The FBI has pictures of this poem at all the post offices. The FDA has banned the use of this poem by anyone under the age of 99. The ATF has orders to shoot this poem on sight. The utterance of this poem has been declared to be in violation of Articles 7 through 77 of the Patriot Act. Just by listening to it, you are complicit in crimes against the state, as well as the tenets of the Chamber of Commerce, the Better Business Bureau, the PTA, the NRA, and the DMV. This poem made the brown acid. The Surgeon General warns that this poem has been shown to cause cancer in laboratory animals. Do not listen to this poem if pregnant, under the influence of alcohol, or while operating heavy machinery. If thoughts of this poem continue after hearing it, discontinue use and consult physician immediately. This poem may cause runny nose, headaches, nausea, shortness of breath, memory loss, joint pain, fainting, blindness, botulism, communism, anti-disestablishmentarianism, high blood pressure, low blood pressure, no blood pressure, coma, and or death. Ask your doctor if this poem may be right for you. We have just received unconfirmed reports by anonymous sources from an undisclosed location that there is no need for alarm. This poem is merely a figment of your imagination, a harmless byproduct of the mass hysteria caused by accidentally living in the 21st century. Please continue shopping and have a nice day. This poem will be watching. So there you go, a little sampling of some of my work.
I really like that last one.
Great.
I'll tell you, that's the first time I ever heard anti-disestablishmentarianism used in a poem. But
yeah, well, you know, when I
what an achievement.
When I found the perfect spot for it, I was very excited.
Absolutely, it fit perfectly.
yeah, that's so, that's a fun piece to perform out at bars and whatnot.
I bet it is.
Yeah,
Mark, what are you doing now? Are you on tour anywhere, or can people hear you?
No, I got back from Michigan a little while ago. I was doing a lot of readings out there and directing a show, but I'm back in Livingston, Montana now, opening a used bookstore this month. We got May 26th, bringing in Rick Bass to talk about the attempted oil development here in the area in Montana, as our kind of featured speaker for the grand opening. And I'm going to be kind of, you know, stuck in town for a while trying to sell some used books. And, you know, I might be hopefully back on the road if the bookstore, my plan is the bookstore will either be successful and I can go back on the road, or it'll be a miserable failure and we go bankrupt and then I'm free to go back on the road. So either way.
Well, at least you have realistic expectations.
Exactly.
I used to work for a used bookstore, so I'm familiar with that business. It's wonderful and challenging and frustrating, and good luck.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, those adjectives kind of describe everything we do in this you know, nebulous line of work that probably all your listeners are in, and certainly you guys doing the show are in. You know, challenging, frustrating.
Yep, that's it. I wouldn't have it any other way either.
No.
Mark, thank you for appearing on the show, and I hope you'll visit with us again sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'll try to have a fully charged phone next time.
Oh, that sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right, man. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And now, a public service announcement from the Medal of Freedom Nomination Committee. George H.W. Bush, conspirator to kill John F. Kennedy, murderer of thousands in Panama, and very recent Medal of Freedom honoree. Gene Kirkpatrick, George Tenet, Tony Blair, General Tommy Franks, General Richard Myers, Norman Schwarzkopf, Dick Cheney, Henry Kissinger, Colin Powell, Caspar Weinberger, Donald Rumsfeld, and Ronald Reagan. The Medal of Freedom, Order of the Soviet Red Star, George Orwell. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is knowledge. Stupid is one thing, bold-faced lying another. We are the Medal of Freedom Nomination Committee. Just don't think about it.
We're proud to be sponsored this evening by the Minuteman, guarding America's borders from poor people. Our own great-grandparents were poor, and they came here from other places, huddled masses yearning to be free. We, their descendants, the Minutemen, are fighting for freedom from poor people, taking aim at frightened lasses crouching by a tree. We urinate on the Statue of Liberty. We defecate on Ellis Island. We've got ours crunched tight in our cold, dead, clammy hands. In just 60 seconds, we are able to desecrate the whole idea of America. We are the Minutemen. And it, just in this late-breaking news brief, the House Un-American Activities Committee may be reconvening next week. The committee will be investigating un-American activities such as the murder of children in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the restricting of personal freedoms through the so-called Patriot Act, as well as the infiltration of American organizations by members of clandestine terror groups. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Central Intelligence Agency? Appearing next week before the committee will be Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, Diane Sawyer, Brian Williams, and in absentia, Peter Jennings. Stay tuned.
In my opening remarks, I mentioned Food Not Bombs, a worldwide group dedicated to feeding the hungry. Tonight's guest, Keith McHenry, founded that movement in 1980 with the help of his friends and roommates in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He now runs the Taos Peace House and continues to be the most public face of Food Not Bombs. Keith, welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you.
That's
Keith,
cool.
were you a student at BU when you founded Food Not Bombs?
Yeah, I was studying painting and drawing, and we also had to have other academic classes, and one of my classes was American History with Howard Zinn.
Huh. I recently read that some students from my alma mater, Wesleyan University, are active in the Food Not Bombs in Middletown, Connecticut. A couple of years back, they were nailed by the cops there, but I don't think anybody went to jail. On the other hand...
they were just handcuffed.
You've been harassed.
And what was kind of amazing about the Middletown kids is that they ended up creating a law that legalized the sharing of free food with anybody without restriction within the state of Connecticut, and that grew out of the Wesleyan kids' resistance there.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah, and that is the only state where such a thing has happened, and we're currently, other states are not taking too kindly to us, like Florida, which has been waging a huge campaign against Food Not Bombs for a number of years now.
Yes. Well, that's my home state, so I've seen quite a bit of that. I was going to ask you about jail, though. You've been harassed very actively. I read that you've been arrested 100 times. Is that right?
Yeah, at least 100 times for sharing free food in San Francisco and other related issues. And I'd also been arrested in other situations, too. Like I was arrested several times in Tucson, Arizona, and at the Republican National Convention in New York City when I made the mistake of walking by the Madison Square Garden. But, yeah, I've definitely been, and I've done, according to the district attorney of San Francisco, over 500 days in jail. That was before when I was still waiting trial on a case where I ended up facing 25 years to life, and I was framed by the mayor's office in a case where the mayor's film commissioner attacked me in a phone booth, and then I was accused of assault and battery, strong-arm robbery. And then later on, a politician who really hated the homeless and Food Not Bombs slammed her office door on my friend, and the glass broke out and cut my hand, and I got charged with assault with a deadly weapon. And we were borrowing milk crates from a vegetarian restaurant near San Francisco City Hall, and they accused me of stealing 24 Berkeley Farms dairy milk crates. And when the trial opened, actually, the Berkeley Farms dairy came to my outside the courthouse and had a huge banner saying, "Please return our milk crates."
Oh, you're kidding.
No, that was really crazy. My bail originally was $250,000 on that case, and eventually we got it down to $75,000. And but still took quite a long time to, an activist friend actually put up the title to his building to free me, but the city refused to accept the value of the building. Then they refused to accept the reality of the bail insurance and so on, and just kept me hanging in jail for months as a result.
More recently, you were a victim of torture by the CIA?
Well, I was actually the person that oversaw my torture, and that was actually in the 90s during this three strikes case. So on three separate occasions, I was captured by the San Francisco police, but in ununiformed officers, taken to police headquarters, and there was a office space for police intelligence. And so they ripped my clothes off of me and threw me face down on the floor of this room, this real huge room with very tall ceilings, and lifted me repeatedly by my arms and legs. So you could hear my tendons and ligaments ripping. And I was then lifted into this small miniature cage, like a miniature jail cell, and which was hanging from the ceiling in the corner of this room, and left there for 3 days. And the police did this to me 3 times. It turned out the person overseeing this was a man by the name of Tom Girard. And he had been CIA, but there's an exchange program where the people that have been trained in what's called information extraction and at Fort Huachuca in Arizona, they are then will sometimes be in the CIA. And in Tom's case, he was doing this to labor organizers as a CIA officer in El Salvador during the war. And then he was switched over to San Francisco and started to do things like this to political activists in San Francisco. And I was caught up in that. And like I say, it happened to me 3 times. Afterwards, he did get caught in another case of manipulating motor vehicle records, which he had also done to me. And it was that crime that ultimately kind of got him in trouble. And the FBI, local FBI, declared him to be a rogue, officer. And then he got hired by one of the famous people from the Iran-Contra days, C-Corps. And he went over to the Philippines to torture people there, apparently. I think he's retired now, if he's not passed away by now.
Well, I guess there's always a job for such a marketable skill, right?
Apparently so. Before he was CIA, he was San Francisco Intelligence, and his nickname was the Weatherman. And the reason his nickname was the Weatherman is that he always knew which way the weather would blow. And his job was working in the gang task force. And apparently at that time, according to legal documents that I read, his job was to start, there was a technique that the police were using at that time of drive-by shootings. And so he would infiltrate a gang, he would encourage the gang to do a drive-by on a rival gang, and then that way, then it would, they would go back and forth, and he could predict when when this would start to happen, because it turned out he actually was one of the people inspiring this activity.
That's always effective. You instigate the action so that you can go around and get the people.
That's what
pretty,
he did. They
pretty
actually
typical
seem to run
police
both parts,
practice these
you know,
days.
The, both gangs. Not that the police weren't a gang of their own.
Yeah, they're the worst one. Probably.
Yeah. And it's a lot of Americans would be shocked about this, I'm sure, and be very upset, because you're assuming you're in a free and democratic society. That's kind of the way the media is portraying things, and that the police are just trying to help you out. And I'm sure there is a great many officers who are just, local officers who are really concerned about protecting the local community. And many officers may not even know that this is part of the activities of their own, you know, force. And, but the San Francisco police and many other large cities, New York City and Los Angeles, you have the Ramparts Division. This is, kind of a, you know, domestic control is not uncommon. And, in San Francisco, Food Not Bombs was considered a gang. We had a gang book in each of the precincts where we were being detained. What they do is they take our pictures, of course, and they would take both on the streets and in the police station, and they would have, you know, put us in these, our photos in these books. And I've seen them pull the book off the shelf a couple of times while I was in custody at Northern Station. And there was an ongoing war against us in San Francisco. But the crazy thing to me was that we had originally discovered that we were considered America's most hardcore terrorist group in 1988, on Thanksgiving weekend of 88, when some of our supporters who were wearing Food Not Bombs buttons were approached at airports that holiday weekend and talked to by National Guards people who were flying home or flying somewhere, and they would be, you know, spoken to, and they would be told, oh, yeah, we know Food Not Bombs. They're one of America's most hardcore terrorist groups. We just studied them in counterterrorism courses. And that was the first I ever realized that we could ever be considered a terrorist organization. And then later on, the ACLU would get documents about the activities of Food Not Bombs. And most recently, I received a bunch of documents about Richmond, Virginia Food Not Bombs and the fact that they had to be infiltrated and that they the informant went with Food Not Bombs to Quantico to a protest where the local chapter was sharing food in solidarity with the activists that were protesting Bradley Manning's detention there.
It's hard to believe that this is considered terrorism. When, you know, all you do is go feed people and talk about problems and, you know, people that are activists. You're branded as terrorists. It's just,
yeah, it seems sick. Like what has, you know, what we can tell is that, and this would be wonderful if we get more definitive information about this, but in 1988, we, you know, the Berlin Wall was still standing. The Soviet Union was still a threat. And yet, and then Food Not Bombs itself, however, was had three chapters, one in San Francisco, one in Long Beach, California, and one in Boston. And yet, we were already declared a terrorist threat. And our belief was that, one, that they needed a new enemy after the Soviet Union. And then, two, there was the issue of that the defense contractors were concerned that the public would see us sharing food with hundreds of people and under the banner Food Not Bombs, and that the public would become sympathetic and urge Congress to divert spending that was going to the military towards things that would create real security for the people of the country, like education, health care, and things like that.
One can only hope that people might decide to want those things. So, Keith, what are you doing in Florida?
Well, I came to Florida for a couple of reasons. First, we've been having a case in Orlando where the city of Orlando had created a law that was primarily affecting Food Not Bombs, but several other small organizations as well, including a church of made up entirely of people that were homeless. And so that ordinance we had successfully defeated in federal court, and the federal judge had ordered the city to pay our attorneys $200,000. But then just before they were supposed to pay that money, the city hired a private law firm to appeal the case. They appealed it to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeal in Atlanta, Georgia. And then on April 12th, that appellate court ruled that our First Amendment rights were protected by this ordinance. So the ordinance says that we cannot share food and literature with more than 24 people without applying for a permit, and that we can only be issued a permit twice a year per park, and that there's 42 parks where this ordinance covers, and that of the 42 parks, one of them happens to be City Hall, Orlando City Hall. So I wanted to be supportive of them and come out and help them out. Plus, there's a woman, Liz Tadich, who has been making a documentary about Food Not Bombs for a number of years, and she's been covering the whole angle of how Food Not Bombs has been considered a terrorist organization, even though we have a mission statement which includes that we're dedicated to nonviolent direct action. And even so, though, we've been framed many, many times by the government and under terrorism charges, including the Republican National Convention in 2008, where our three cookhouses were raided by FBI and Homeland Security. But also, as this was developing, the police in Fort Lauderdale started to harass that chapter, and they're very organized Food Not Bombs group there, and they've been sharing twice a week in front of the public library where many homeless people hang out. And this had become such a struggle that the police eventually came to their home and broke down the doors forced everybody out into the front of their house and questioned them on whether they were a terrorist organization, whether they're Black Bloc, were they a training camp for terrorism, all these things like that. And they did this under the they came several more times after that. Was not quite as dramatic the next couple of times. Most recently, once I'd actually come to Florida, they had a celebration. They do a May Day celebration every year. Part of their May Day celebration was to play capture the flag at the park where they share free food. And the police arrested two of the volunteers for trespassing by walking on some grass in front of a bank, which was closed that Sunday afternoon. And they came and, a couple of times to the house while I was there. They demanded for everyone to come out of the house so he could question us. They've also ticketed them for driving around town and so on with little crazy things like that the light isn't bright enough over their license plate. And so this ended up becoming a pattern that we started to see. And then it turned out Sarasota Food Not Bombs is under pressure to get out of their park. They had made a law that you can't smoke in the park, you can't lay down in the park, all these ordinances like that that have been not directly towards Food Not Bombs, but now they're starting to, with the fact that the appellate court ruled against Orlando, propose new laws there. And the same thing's happening where there's suggestion of trying to drive St. Petersburg Food Not Bombs out of sight. Part of that is also because the Republican National Convention is coming to St. Petersburg, or to Tampa, really. And so there is essentially kind of an effort here in Florida to drive Food Not Bombs to areas where no one will see us and no one will know that we're trying to organize. No one will be influenced by our ideas. And so we're trying to resist that. So we have a very Food Not Bombs gathering in Orlando the weekend of the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, where we're inviting Food Not Bombs activists from all over Florida to come and discuss strategies of how to resist the wide array of ordinances and laws and tactics that are being used against the homeless and against Food Not Bombs.
Well, that's quite a story there, Keith. We're out of time, I'm afraid, but I hope the next time you're in Fort Lauderdale, you'll give me a call. I'd like to meet you in person.
Very, very good. We're thinking we're going to be down on the 19th of May to share free food outside the library there. And every single Wednesday and Friday at 5:30, there is a possibility of political retaliation and suppression of Food Not Bombs. And the most horrible thing of Fort Lauderdale that just happened this past week was they created there's a homeless task force, and they decided that if you want to share food with the hungry in Fort Lauderdale, you have to join the Salvation Army and get on their little soup truck and go from wherever the Salvation Army takes you around town. And, of course, that does not make it, one, easy for homeless people to find meals, and, two, it makes it very hard to be organizing to encourage the people of Fort Lauderdale to see that food is a right and not a privilege, and that we should disarm and spend those resources on the people of the United States.
Well, Keith, keep up the good fight. I really like the things you're doing, and I hope you'll visit with us again.
Yeah, have me on again anytime, and everyone can visit foodnotbombs.net to find out more information.
Thanks again.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. On Sunday, it was 99 degrees. It had to be a record. Everyone told each other, and sure enough, it was. At the 8:30 a.m. Mass on Monday, Father Tony Marconi came out in his white vestments and a pin with the picture of a...
We have lookouts 24/7, 365 on the water tower looking for terrorists. We also have deputized citizens going undercover looking for terrorists at the swimming pool, the grocery store, also at the county fair. And now that Osama bin Laden has been killed, their stories can be told. Probably the war on terror will end just like in the early 90s when the Soviet Union folded and we put all that money for military weapons into health care, schools, and roads in the peace dividend. But now we'll probably bring all the troops home, cut defense spending to almost zero, close the military bases overseas. Just what other reason would they be there for? And then we'll spend the money on fixing sidewalks and tuck pointing the old schools and letting people get health care when they need it. Now, finally, the stories from the files of the patriots who kept us free over this past decade. And a big thank you and welcome home. Is this heaven? Well, from up here, it kind of does maybe seem like that. I'm way up here on the water tower. Well, not on the water tower, on that walkway that goes around. We've got one of those silver pointed ones, not so big. Not like the big round white ones they have in Fremont and Columbus. Ours depicts at various times the town name, the current graduating class, the current mayor's current girlfriend, current state of the local educational system by a spelling acumen. I've been stationed here by the local city council to look for terrorists. For Jesus Liberty, maybe his gang. He might have a gang. That's some of the reports we've been getting. I'm scanning the perimeter, looking for the Nebraska terrorist, Jesus Liberty, as well as any other terror types. And they gave me this cool pith helmet with netting and a beeper. I get a beeper. I try it. It beeps. I've got this assistant, Jordan. He's going to be in fifth grade in the fall. He sends me up extra water on this pulley system he fixed up. Maybe I'm facing the wrong way, but what I see is Mrs. Vanderdreesen pulling into the Hy-Vee lot. She's been pulling in for most of the morning. There's a special on iceberg lettuce. I see Jared Vandenboom. He's driving around in the cruiser, mostly watching me. There's most of the city council coming out of coffee at family table. They're not really supposed to get together like that. Makes people think they're planning, making decisions outside of meetings. They're pointing up at me. Hey, guys, there's the spire of St. Lucie's Catholic Church over in Mount Carl. On the other side of the corn and soybeans and the river and the dump at the National Guard Armory. Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled. Don't worry about a thing. The perimeter is secure. I'll let you know if I see anything. Hasta los tacos. Oh, there's Lula Vanderswag. I could see a lot more if I had some binos. Hey, Jordan. Hey, come here. Hey, I have to whisper. I'm here amid the market lambs and the Myers family. Shh. I wish you could see me, but I'm incognito. I managed to slip inside the infrastructure of the Ace County Fair. The sun's shining bright. It's hot. It's very early, but the little bleachers in the sheep judging arena are already packed hip to butt to brisket. Over here. I'm the understudy judge, my public persona. Actually, I'm here under the not quite official auspices of the United States Department of Homeland Security. I understand if I'm captured, they'll deny any knowledge of me whatsoever. I'm used to that. My parents said the same thing. I get to wear this green vest with a big button with a photo of a sheep. There are about 100 other badges on this vest, all for starting fires. I'm wondering if it might have belonged to an insane Girl Scout one time. I've got a straw hat that kind of hangs in my eyes, black-rimmed glasses, yellow judging shorts, the real deal. I'll be here all week. My goal is to get over to the Nebraska sweet corn dipped in butter and then chocolate booth and back here without losing my spot. Ah! Oh, that just came out. For some reason, I'm finding out I have a certain affinity with sheep, but I'm not taking my eye off the target, not for a moment. I have my eyes on the prize. There isn't anything or anybody in this arena that will escape my extreme scrutiny. Go about your day. I got this. I actually think the guy in the brand new coveralls in the third row from the bottom would fry up real well. His wife has good muscling and a nice rump. They both have good thickness through the leg, natural thickness. Over the top, the definition is apparent with good straightness of lines. Bah! Sorry. Sorry, ma'am. Undercover. Hey, while there's a break here, I want to tell you about something. Something about sheep and human beings and how to tell the difference. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, God bless America. Hey, oh my God. How you doing? Let me catch my breath. I'm deployed with the guys on one of the silver metal benches outside the city swimming pool. We're watching for terrorists. Dude, they can't swim. It's like Negroes and wetbacks. Dead dog giveaway. It's also late in the summer. I suppose the moms have these El Primo tans as well as the lifeguards in their one-piece red suits and those whistles that dangle like necklaces. Anywho, that'd be myself, Don, Milt, Al, and Fred. We're the newly formed Municipal Special Forces Team. Total Information Terror Surveillance. We've been duly organized and chartered and deputized, I think, by the City Council to guard against terrorists beginning this month, running through the school year. That's how I understand it. Don came up with this idea to come here. The pools open up to Labor Day. He says, why do you think they call them wetbacks? The rest of us had to admit it made perfect sense. Of course, everybody knows Arab types will often position towels on their heads. A lot of towels around here today. Al's got four in his lap and won't give out any to anybody. Not without good reason, he says. It's hot today. Big crowd, lots to watch, keep track of, monitor, observe. Sometimes we get soaked. We're pretty close to the action. We act like we like it that way. Al's got the beeper in case we need to call for backup towels. His wife's home most of the day. Tomorrow she got shit to do. By now, the lifeguards don't wear that white stuff on their noses. Everything, au natural. We got sunglasses from the Ben Franklin store. Orange terror vests and shorts. Special homeland orange hard hats. That was Al's idea. They came from the state highway maintenance shed from the big patch job they had last summer out by the go-kart track. If it gets too hot, well, Don's going to ask a councilman who's his neighbor can take them off while the pool has rest break and get some breeze. Some ladies get up real quick when they're napping on their stomachs and they get splashed. Maybe I have that one string knot tied, eh? Millie had to go home early yesterday. Gets to a guy. This work is not for everyone. We've each got a terror whistle and a string around our necks. Fred blew his loud for about a minute straight just a few minutes ago. Mr. Champlain walked past on her way to the water fountain. I don't think he even knew he was doing it. Some days it's about all a guy can do not to blow the damn thing all day long. Don keeps his in his mouth and all the time like a referee. He's not moved, scratched, nothing. He loves freedom that darn much. He's so dedicated, an inspiration to us all. Okay, well, nothing happening here at the moment. Look out. Cannonball! God bless the USA. Go about your day. I got this.
Okay, so I'm sitting here in Greg's Hometown Foods, store detective looking for terrorists securing the homeland on the front lines. As always, just trying to do my part to ensure the freedom of my fellow Americans. I'm looking for Mexicans who might be illegally alive, who do not have the proper stamp on their papers in their pocket, and thus deserve to be separated from their weeping children and sent to wherever we want to send them in a hot, crowded, white INS van. If you can see me from where you are seated, you know that I am also sitting on the floor in the corner between the white milk and the tortillas at the far end of the Mexican foods aisle. It is my charge to find any Islamicist, Hispanianists, or other terror-type individuals. I am also to tackle anyone I suspect of being from Iowa, Greg says. I am undercover, as per usual. I'm wearing a big white sombrero. My head is drooping to my knees, but I am not sleeping. Sometimes I'm sleeping. Sometimes snoring. I get a beeper. I'm wearing a new white T-shirt with blood-red letters. Pinche puta, store detective. Pretty cool. Go about your day. I got this. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
And that's another New American Dream radio show. I'm sorry, folks. I had my mic muted. Just been one problem after another tonight. But that's what makes it fun. I'd like to thank Leno Sanek for producing our show and putting up with us. I'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring the show, and WorldNewsTrust.com for hosting our show's website, theshow.newamericandream.info. Visit that site, also newamericandream.net, and stop back again to listen to us, same time, same place, next week. Thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Down in Australia when the Waco debacle ended. And I was very bummed because I thought that was the most fascinating story of the year, bar none. And everyone was so upset with that guy because he called himself Jesus, right? And I said, come on, you know, the guy's real name is Vernon. Let him be Jesus for a couple of months. You know what I mean? What's it to you? Who's going to follow a Messiah named Vernon anyway? You got to be Jesus. That's part of the Messiah deal. And Vernon's fake. Yeah. What are we doing? I'm following Vernon. Where y'all going? To the drive-in. Joe Bob Briggs said the movie was real good. Vernon's going. He's my Messiah. He said he'd get us some beef jerky. I follow Vernon. Isn't that weird, though? People always snap and think they're Jesus. How come no one ever snaps and thinks they're Buddha? Particularly in America, where more people resemble Buddha than Jesus. I'm Buddha. You're Bubba. I'm Buddha now. All I gotta do is change two letters on my belt. Bubba. Buddha. Come over here and read my scripture. Vernon's a false prophet. Buddha Bubba's the real man.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city.
On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Pelacek reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever on the move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly. Because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachek's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Pelacek writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Pelacek. The website again, newamericandream.info.